And we're live, everyone. Welcome back to this week's episode of the Tier Podcast. I'm Fred Lambert, your host, and I'm joined with Seth Wintraub. How are you doing today, Seth?
I'm awesome, Fred. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great because this week we had an awesome week on the Nice Track, a ton of posts, very big week for electric vehicle news, the whole EV world in general. And we started off, as usual, with a little update on the Tesla Model 3 production ramp, starting with an email that we leaked that Elon Musk, Tesla CEO, sent out to all the employees, and was about the progress on the Model 3 production ramp. He said that everything was looking good this week to exceed 500 cars per day, which now that we know that Model 3 is running at 7 days a week, that technically means 3,500 cars.
Or more.
Or more, he said, exceed 500 per day for the week. And that's very good news in terms of progress if they actually achieved it. So we don't know yet. It's still just Friday, but we're going to update you next week for sure. And the last update, we were talking about just over 2,000 a week. So that was late April, early May. The Tesla achieved sustained a good production range of 2,000 a week, sustained over at least 3 weeks. Of course, there was the production stop in between that, and now there's going to be a new one later this month. But we already knew about that from earlier this month when Tesla released the first quarter financial result. So there's going to be a few stops within the production ramp, but each time it's to increase the production, of course. And the last one seems to have been successful if they managed to do that 3,500 rate. And in the same email, you also ask if anyone is aware of any production bottleneck in it that they have to come directly to him. So he's still responsible for that production ramp up.
Yeah, and I hate to keep saying this, but it's hard for me to understand the bear case, in relation to the ramp up of Model 3 production, because every time there's a stoppage, the thing is we can't, Tesla's stopping, it's the end of the world, but they're always stopping to
coming back and forth.
Yeah, they're hitting the bottlenecks and bringing in new equipment or new line stuff or whatever. But that doesn't seem out of out of the ordinary. It seems kind of what you would hope would happen. And then we're at 3,500. We're pretty much going to hit 5,000 pretty soon. If you look at the line as linear, they're not going to go backwards. They're not going to be oh, I forgot how to do that, so fast, and we're going to be at 3,000 again. It seems very, obvious that they're going to be able to get to 5,000. And if the projections are correct, at 5,000, they're breaking even. And after that, they start profiting off the Model 3.
Yeah, so, hopefully.
That's
you were talking about the bear case. That's the bear case. Yeah, a lot of people still think that even at 5,000 a week, they're not going to make money. But that's based on a lot of misconception, I think, mainly on battery costs.
Right.
And what I'm most impressed by just right now at this point, 3,500 per week, is that all those cars are the fully equipped long-range vehicle at this point. I mean, they are finding enough reservation. We know that there's a ton of reservation on there. I mean, close to 500,000 at the highest point before they started deliveries. And we thought that the bulk maybe of that demand was closer to the starting price of 35,000, or maybe just a few options, maybe $40,000. But now it's costing over $50,000 if you want to get 50 is the minimum right now. You can easily get to 60, and you don't have all wheel drive yet. So right now, if they are producing 3,500 per week, that means they are selling those to people that are willing to get the fully equipped long range rear wheel drive, fully equipped. I mean, premium interior and that's pretty much it, really. it's still a big upgrade, $5,000 for that. Not everyone wants to.
Yes, so it's 9,000 for the 25 kilowatt hours of extra battery alone. And, we know that Tesla is nearing $100 per kilowatt hour. So that's of battery. So that's $2,500 of battery. They're selling for $9,000.
Yeah.
There's some good margin on that.
For sure. And they hope to increase that with all-wheel drive right now. But I mean, pre-deliveries, the surveys were saying something like at least 30% of people were looking for the standard battery pack and something like that. So, and we're still only in the, well, we're starting in Canada right now, but deliveries are still only in the US. So even though that 500,000 is big, when you cut it down to only the US, then you cut it down to the premium interior, you cut it down to that long range battery pack, you cut it down to just the rear wheel drive. I'm really surprised that there's still enough orders for it in the US only and now in Canada.
I mean, there's a lot of people. So some news, I finally got my Model 3. So there's, I'm one of the people who are like, okay, I'll take the black interior and I don't really need the extra range, but I just really want to get in this car. So, and you know, truth be told, my intention is to get a different model down the road and sell this one when that arrives. And I think I can still get some good money for it because there's such a big line. And, you know, people who want to get one of these vehicles don't want to get one in 2 years. They want to get one, you know, when they get one. So,
and you took advantage of the full federal tax credit too.
Right. So I think that'll stop soon.
Yeah, you might just end up losing that maybe, and then a small percentage of the value over the period that you use it. And at the end of the day, you're going to be able to get the other car.
Yeah.
It's going to be a good test to see how it retains its value too.
Right.
Unless you have like a premium for being owned by the publisher of Electrek or something like that.
Right. Oh, yeah. That'll be a placard on the glove box. Just little anecdote about the car is amazing. Like, it's really, like, I have a couple of friends who have Teslas, Model S's and X's, and they just love, like, how it rides. It's really smooth. It's really quiet. It feels very light. My personal opinion is that, like, the more people I show this, the more people are going to get in line. Like, I don't think Tesla is going to be able to make enough Model 3s for like 5 years, because there's just going to be so many people who want this car. And it's a car. Like, everybody wants SUVs now. So the fact that Ford isn't even making sedans anymore is, like, to me, it's like, you know why? Because everybody who's in the market for a sedan is online for that car.
Yeah, so, maybe. Yeah, that's a possibility.
Yeah, you know, maybe not 100%. But
no,
you know,
for sure not 100%. But
there's still some BMW 330s going off the lines, I imagine, and some Audi A3s and A4s and stuff.
Well, there's a big thing in the auto industry of loyalty to the brand. I mean, so Tesla's have a lot of work to do on that front. They have a big fan base, of course. But I mean, there's still some hardcore BMW, some hardcore Mercedes fans out there. And like you said, if you get in a car and you use it for a while and you start to appreciate all the minimalistic approach to the interior, and just like, it's a great electric car that's light, and that's almost a first. I mean, it was a Bolt too, but the Bolt, of course, is not. It's a great car, and it's a lot cheaper than the Model 3 right now, but it's just not on par at this point, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I own a Bolt as well, and I don't think I've driven it once since we got the Model 3. Anecdotally.
Yeah, so that was our first update from Model 3 this week about the production ramp. So you should keep your eye out for some more invitation coming soon, more VINs being released. And of course, as for the all-wheel drive and the performance version, Elon said that it was coming by the end of the week, but we haven't seen anything yet.
Elon time.
It's on Elon time right now. So about end of the week is end of the week. It's not necessarily Friday. It's like maybe not the end of the business week.
It's the end of the Mars week, which is actually 3 months from now.
And so I checked just now. I checked my Tesla account since I have an open reservation with an invite, but I still not can configure my all-wheel drive or performance version. So we're going to have to wait maybe a few more days, or maybe more. We don't know. The next big Model 3 news is, well, not that big, is IIHS, which is the Instrument Institute of Highway Safety, an independent agency in the U.S. that conducts some of the safety tests for vehicles. Not all vehicles, but a few of them. And they were pretty quick to get on the Model 3, which they weren't really quick to do the Model S and X before. But for Model 3 now, they are one of the first to start releasing some data about it. They haven't performed a full invasive crash test yet. It's just the ones that doesn't end with the car being completely crushed. So we're talking about the forward avoidance crash test, which the the Model 3 ended up achieving a superior rating, which simply just means that for the 12 miles per hour and the 25 miles per hour, the automatic emergency system was able to stop the car and avoid an accident. So we knew that the EEB system and it's the same in the Model S basically. So Model S has the same rating, and of course it used the same autopilot hardware suit. So there's no big surprise here. At that speed, the EEB system in the Model and all Tesla vehicles are pretty good. The other test, there was only two tests out of I think seven that they conducted that they were released this week, is the headlight test. And the IHS is pretty thorough with the headlight test. So they had a big problem with the Model S with it. It was a very big issue for them, and it ended up having a poor rating. But for the Model 3, they got an acceptable rating, which is a little bit better, but not still not on par with I think it's still like 20%, like top 20% if you get an acceptable rating. Good is like top 5% or something like that.
Yeah, so just another anecdote. I've been driving around at night, and twice people have flashed me, though I don't have my high beams on. And I believe it was because they thought I had my high beams on. So, and I know that they said that the low beams created some glare, and I'm wondering if that was why. That's, you know, it might be tons of different things, but
maybe it was just a cop.
Yeah, no, because I thought that initially that's what I thought it was, but there was no cop. So,
no cop.
So, you know, something to think about. I don't know.
Yeah, but the actual issue with the ISS HS was an inadequate on the right side for the low beams. That was the problem that ended up with the acceptable rating. So there was a lot of speculation right away, people trying to say that the Model 3 just got disqualified for the top safety pick from the IHS, which is sort of prestigious in the automotive industry to get that pick. Technically, they are with the current test, but they do update the test after a while. And from my understanding, Tesla could just, or IHS themselves could just adjust the headlamp on the beam, on the headlights, and that could fix the issue. I mean, it's not an issue with the power. It was an issue with how it was directed on the right side. And you can pretty easily adjust those things. So Tesla could submit another test with an adjustment, and they could update the rating to a good rating and then still be eligible for the top safety pick. So it's not impossible. Pretty sure that's what Tesla's going to do. And I would be surprised if IHS doesn't allow it at this point. Moving on, there was a few other Tesla updates this week, but to the Model S and Model X. So last week we spoke about the little interior update that both vehicles received. There was another slight update for it, specifically for the performance version of those cars, which were omitted from the last update from last week. And now it limited the number of options that you have to bottom the interior. But what they added this week is that the ventilated seats are coming back, guys. That was an option over a year ago, which was later discontinued by Tesla. It wasn't clear why. I think at some point it was a comment about the demand just not being there for it. I know that a lot of people complained about it too, like saying that it wasn't very efficient, like wasn't cooling the seat that much. I know that Bjorn did a popular video to try to show that there was suction or it was
blowing. Yeah, the plastic wrap out.
Yeah, with plastic wrap on it. And I mean, it's not like Vance said, they don't just blow air that much. I mean, it's mostly inside the cushion that there's air circulation that cools the seat. So I wouldn't be waiting too much for air to blow out of those perforation in the leather or the fake leather in this case. But yeah, they're coming back. So we assume that they updated it over the last year that they weren't available. So we're gonna keep an eye out for the first seed that comes to production, which I assume is gonna be in the next few weeks since you can put an order right now. And yeah, so there's probably gonna be new seeds from Tesla with advanced adoption. It's only for the performance version, so they're not available for anything else. It looks like Tesla is trying to build some exclusive option for the performance version, which is of course a higher margin vehicle for Tesla. And if they can sell more of those, they can increase the overall gross margin for the vehicle program. So that's both for Model S and X. But they also changed an option for the Model S P100D with now the black arachnid wheels, 21-inch wheels, are now available at the purchase of the car. So if you remember, guys, the arachnid wheels were originally only available through the referral program. So you needed to refer... what was different between the few different programs, but at one point it was 4, another point was 5 referrals within like 3 months, something like that. And you would get the wheels. I don't remember them being black though. I think
they were gray or silver.
Gray or silver. That was the only two options. So black is all new, but the design of the wheel is the same as the whole arachnid, but they weren't ever available on outside of the, referral program. At some point, they showed up on Tesla's aftermarket website, but okay. They did show up, but I don't think they were ever able to order it from there. Maybe they were at some point that they were discontinued pretty quickly, but I don't remember being available for long. But now you can just order it right from your design studio, and the two orders are still available too. So,
for those wondering, you cannot put arachnid wheels on a Model X or a Model 3. Three is because the size of the wheel bay, but for the Model X you would think you could put some thicker tires on there, but the arachnid are not strong enough apparently to carry the weight of the Model X. They're not rated to. They might be strong enough, but because I think they tried to pull as much weight off the wheels, they didn't really make it strong enough to be rated to carry the Model X.
Yeah, and there's not that big difference with the weight of the Model X and the X of that, the performance version, but there's still a good 10% almost. So
yeah.
It can make a difference if you're really trying to shave some weight. And they did, I think, maybe shave as much at 15 pounds total, something like that, of the wheels.
Yeah, which is significant for wheels.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes a difference. But yeah, that was the update for Model S and X this week. The supercharger network. So that was a very big comment from Elon Musk that some people are skeptical about, and we're going to explain why. So Elon said this week that there are thousands of supercharger locations going through permitting and construction phase right now.
Is that globally or in the U.S. or what?
It has to be globally because, the skepticism is about people say that he maybe meant superchargers and not supercharger location. But I think that would be a big omission on his part. Like it's a big mistake. Like there's a big difference between the number of supercharger and supercharger location, because location, of course, means the station itself. And yeah. Supercharger means the number of charge point. And thousands, so thousands would mean more than 2,000 or more. And currently there are 1,252 official stations open. So it would more than double the number of current stations, which is a pretty big statement in my opinion, unless he was mistaken. But again, like I think he would have removed that tweet if it was mistaken, because it's a very big mistake. And it's not impossible, because last year Tesla missed his goal to get 10,000 stations. Right now we're at 9,700, not stations.
Yeah, see how easy it is to make that mistake?
Yeah, it is. It is pretty easy. But it's a tweet. He could have removed it and sent a correction right away. And I think he's serious about it. And with the Model 3 coming right now, and soon when you're starting to get to the 3,500 a week and soon 5,000, you're going to need a lot of chargers out there. And I wouldn't be surprised if it's indeed the case. And of course, once you're in the permitting phase and the construction phase, it doesn't mean that it's going to be online in the next few weeks and Tesla's going to double the network by the end of next quarter. We've seen station in the permitting phase for a year. So
yeah, and you know, what phase of like permitting could be like, hey, we're talking to, you know, four or five locations about getting a spot. Maybe some of the permits get turned down. You know, maybe they're, you know, it doesn't work out mathematically, you know, financially, like the electricity is too expensive or whatever. So just because it's in permitting doesn't mean it's going to be a station or it's going to be, you know, pan out. Permitting is pretty broad, you know, set of parameters. So I don't know that. Sounds like the tweet is right, but I think maybe our perception of what permitting means, you know, it doesn't mean that like that station is going to exist for sure.
Yeah. But I mean, the important part of it is actually if there's a permit, is that they actually applied for a specific location. And that's what is most important, I think, at this point for Tesla, because of the competition that is growing right now for charging networks. And I mean, it sounds stupid, but there's a limit on the good location for charging station in general. Like, people want the same thing. Like, they want close to the highways, close to amenities. And I mean, there are a lot of places where you can build them, but the best one's going to go first. And you want to get on that as soon as possible. And I think that's what Tesla is doing right now, especially with Electrify America, which is looking to get hundreds of stations in the next few years too. And in Europe also. So like, it's not just in the US. So Europe with bunch of network right now in the work, of course, China. And it's not that bad. I mean, you can build a station, I think, at the same place too. I think we're going to see a lot of Electrify America station next to supercharger and stuff like that, if you have enough parking space.
It makes sense. I mean, you know, you can consolidate the electrical equipment like near, you know, high voltage lines. You can have the same kind of like, you know, restaurants and shopping experience for both Electrify America and Tesla stuff. So like, why wouldn't you put them together?
Yeah, it makes sense. We see that in Quebec a lot. The few supercharger stations there are, normally there's a universal chargers next to it.
Yeah, Connecticut also has some DC chargers next to superchargers, you know, CHAdeMO and CCS. So yeah, I think that's a great idea. Like, you know, for instance, in New Jersey now, almost every exit that's a almost every highway stopover, you know, where you're on the turnpike and you don't want to get off the turnpike and get back on and go through the thing. So they just have like the gas station and the restaurants and stuff like on a quick off on thing. Mm-hmm. Almost every single one of those on the way from New York City to Philadelphia has like at least eight Tesla superchargers, and quite a few of them are being used. So that corridor between Washington and New York City is like full. Like, it's like almost every exit has one or has some Tesla superchargers. They're all being used. And like, you know, we were driving back up from Florida and we were like, well, you know, where do we need to stop? And it was kind of like, we'll just stop when, you know, we get down to like 10 miles or something, because there's just so, like, they're so densely packed. And I think that's what it's going to be like in the, you know, next 5 years. You're just going to be like, okay, we're getting low. Let's pull over and find a supercharger.
I mean, I think there can be a difference too if Tesla supercharger, urban superchargers, if they deploy those with the current supercharger, they can, if the local use of the supercharger has an effect and loads the current supercharger station that are normally used for long distance travel, if they open those new urban supercharger, I think it can have a good impact on the current usage rates of the long distance superchargers too. So even though the new station might not necessarily be for long distance travel, by opening up the urban superchargers, maybe you decrease the use of the long distance ones and open it up for what the original purpose of it was, which is, again, long distance travels.
Yeah, I mean, it's totally changed. Like, you know, we went on a long distance trip from New York City to Minneapolis, Minnesota, about 3 or 4 years ago. And we had to stop at every supercharger there was. Basically, it was like 180 miles or so between chargers. And if you didn't stop, there's just no, it was just like one, another, and another. And now it's getting to the point where you don't, you know, you're doing some math in your head, like, how far can I go before stopping? Because you obviously want to charge at the lowest point. So it's becoming more like gas. And that's fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's something that right now, unfortunately, just mainly Tesla has. But yeah, maybe in the near future with Electrify America and new EVs that take higher charge rates, for example, the Mission E and the Audi Quattro, it was probably 150. Jaguar Pace is still 100.
E-tron, right?
The E-tron Quattro, yeah.
Yeah.
That's 150, they said.
And then the Jaguar is 100, which I think is kind of more realistic for a car coming out right now. I have a feeling that both Porsche and the Audi are going to be realistically closer to 100 kilowatts. Yes.
You're going to be able to get like the 150 maybe just for
right.
A second. But I'm talking about the Quattro here. Of course, the Porsche is probably going to be more than that if they are indeed a 800-volt system. But yeah, moving on. Another big news this week, we leaked another Elon Musk email about reorganization that he promised during the conference call earlier this month. So that wasn't clear because that was a comment that was pretty much overlooked during the call that he said that Tesla was going to go through a restructuring. Then the next week, we ended up publishing the big contractor review, sort of a pretty brutal one about, if you remember, it's the one that employees need to vouch for contractors. So we thought that might be what he was referring to when he was talking about the reorganization of the company. But no, there's it's actually going to be more than that, apparently, because what he said that in the email this week is to ensure, I'm quoting, to ensure that Tesla is well prepared for the future, we have been undertaking a thorough reorganization of our company as part of the reorg. We are flattening the management structure to improve communication, combining functions where sensible and trimming activity that are not vital to the success of the mission. So that's pretty vague. I mean, what we took out of it is that look out for more departures in the near future. I mean, that's what we think.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like they're really trying to trim the fat and get to profitability as soon as possible. Also, it sounds, I mean, we know some folks that are not necessarily leaving Tesla, but are taking some time off. And Doug Field was publicly one of those people, and we know of another one. So it's kind of strange. Like, it seems like they're really trying to legitimately trying to flatten the organization quite a bit.
Yeah. The other one that I heard of this week was Canadian leadership. I have a good source that said that the Canadian director, Lainey Lewis, ended up leaving this week and is like his number two, which is in charge of Eastern Canada, also left. Hmm. It's like the two top Canadian Tesla leaders were out. I've not heard of any replacement yet. And if it's directly linked to that restructuring, there might not even be any replacement. It sounds like it could just be taken over because the way they make it sounds like combining functions. So it looks like people could see their responsibility expanded. For example, if you are the leader of a North American cell, instead of breaking it down with a Canadian director, Mexican director, stuff like that, you could just oversee the entire sales team for North America and similar things. So
maybe Elon's just going to do it.
Yeah. Elon's going to do everything now. We saw just a few weeks back also the director in Europe, and like I'm not sure it was not Central Europe. No, it was UK, Ireland, a few of those countries that left. So it looks to be a big shakeup at the sales level, the sales leadership level.
Right, and that follows Jeremy O'Connell's departure, that's the guy that Tesla or that Elon said he was just going to do, right? His work?
Diamond O'Connell? No, yeah. That was and then that Elon was just going to do his work. No, that was John McNeil. That was John
McNeil, right.
Sales president of sales and service. But I think now Robin Wren, I think, is now in charge of all worldwide sales, which was pretty much McNeil's job. Mm-hmm. Robin Wren was, of course, the head of Tesla in not just China, I think Asia in general, Asia Pacific, I think. But yeah, there are a lot of shakeups, so we're going to follow that in the next few weeks, see how the structure changes and if there are any new leaders that come up out of the restructuring or if it's just people leaving, basically. So we're going to keep an eye on that. If you have any scoop for us, make sure to send it our way and we're gonna check it out. One other thing about Tesla that we're going to talk about this week was the big report that came out about Tesla's impact on the California's economy. So that was a report ordered by Tesla. It was commissioned by Tesla to the IHS Market, which is like a sort of a research firm that does some research for companies. So you have to take it with a grain of salt when it's ordered by a company like that. But what it says basically is that Tesla contributed $5 billion to the Californian economy last year, supported about 51,000 jobs, about 21,000 directly, 30,000 indirectly. A bunch of other things that are interesting in the report, like 150 manufacturing facilities in California, Tesla having over 2,000 suppliers in the state, a bunch of interesting details like that. But I think what is most interesting is like why Tesla is ordering that report right now. I think that's the most interesting part of it. Because, I mean, no one doubted the fact that Tesla has a big impact in California. They were one of the biggest manufacturers in the state at this point. But why ordering right now? My biggest takeaway is that, so what's the value of that report? Value of that report is showing that the states should back Tesla. I mean, Tesla has a very big positive impact in the state, as shown by this report. So back us. And why would Tesla need backing from California? First thing that comes to mind, maybe the incentive, the EV incentive. Tesla has been complaining for years about the EV incentive that are not strict enough in California, even though they are the strictest in the country. But they want stricter incentive. The other thing, though, that I think is maybe more likely based on the timing of it, is an incentive package for a new manufacturing facility. So we know that Tesla is looking for a new manufacturing facility for the Model Y. And we even saw that Tesla was looking into a big plot of land in Oakland. And in the report, there's also a big part of the report that is specific to the county, to the counties where Tesla had a big impact. So if you give that report, you sit that report on the table on people in charge of a county, and then I say, look at what we can do for your county if we end up making a factory here, building a factory. That report is pretty valuable, I think. What do you think?
Yeah, and actually, you know, that report is portable, where you know you could take it to West Virginia or Ohio and say, hey, look what we're doing for California. Wouldn't you like if we did that for your state?
That's a good point. Yeah.
So
I mean, they could have done the same thing with Nevada too, with Sparks and some of that. Because we've seen a great impact in Sparks too, and Nevada for the Gigafactory 1. Just the value of the real estate around the factory was just skyrocketed basically over the last 4 years since Tesla started to build the Gigafactory there, and they're already employing well over a thousand worker now, and it's growing really fast. So I mean, Tesla now, if Tesla is negotiating another incentive deal for a factory, they have so much more credibility than they had 4 years ago when they negotiated the Gigafactory 1, and 1,000 times more than when they ended up buying the NUMMI from Toyota. Well, of course, NUMMI from Toyota was 2009 too, so 2009 was another completely different climate in terms of the economy, especially for the automotive industry.
Right.
And they just scooped that up for, I think, $42 million, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I mean, different people I've talked to have said that it's both a great deal and also not a great deal because they, you know, it was full of old, outdated equipment that had to be moved around. You know, size-wise, clearly it's paid off because, you know, they can build quite a few cars there. But I think it's not as perfect as a, you know, as a lot of people think, you know, like it was kind of sent from heaven because, it, you know, it's right in their backyard and it's kind of huge and kind of exactly what Tesla needed. But, you know, I've also heard anecdotally that there's still a bunch of GM and Toyota stuff in the back of the factory because
I wouldn't be surprised.
They don't know what to do with it.
Yeah,
can't just get rid of these huge, you know, car building lines. So they
at the same time, it was a positive too because of the like the big things like the press, for example, the big press like the aluminum press and stuff like that, big stamping machines. It wasn't included in the deal, the $42 million deal. Toyota technically wanted to keep them, but they couldn't move them. It was just too expensive to move them.
Right.
So they thought that they could sell it to Tesla, but Tesla just kept saying, no, we don't want it.
Yeah,
Yeah, go ahead and move it. And Toyota finally says, we're not going to move it. All right, then we're gonna use it.
For free.
So
did we hear about that on the plant tour? I can't remember. I heard that same story. I don't know if it was at the same time.
If you heard the same story, it was probably at the tour because we were at the tour at the same time. So
yeah,
it wouldn't make sense. So yeah, that was the tour guy from Tesla. So yeah, it's not a third party source, but makes sense too. Like it's the logic is there. So speaking of new sites for factories, there's one coming in the US apparently for the Model Y, but there is one definitely going to China soon, and we are waiting for an announcement in the next few months. What came out this week as a first step toward that is that Tesla set up a new company in Shanghai's free trade zone. So that's a zone where the Chinese government is testing new laws that are less protectionist, more free trade oriented. So that's one of the first places that we think is they're gonna implement the new rule where foreign automakers are able to own an entire production facilities for electric vehicles, which is what Tesla has been waiting for years in order to establish a manufacturing facility in the country. And now they put $15 million aside to set up that new company. And what we assume is getting started on a new production facility that's going to be announced in maybe the next few weeks at this point.
Mm-hmm. And I think since then I saw somewhere that Tesla's put up some China jobs. On their job.
Look at the China Tesla's carrier website. They started putting new jobs that are more engineer related. So Tesla has a ton of jobs right now open in China, but they have mostly been related to sales and like government work and stuff like that. HR, not really manufacturer related, but now it seems to be the case at this point. I have it with my mic again.
Yeah.
I'm gonna have to unplug it and replug it. Give me a second.
All right. So more on China. So $15 million doesn't seem like quite too much money. But you know, getting started, starting off an office in Shanghai's free trade zone, certainly requires some capital, and Tesla's not exactly brimming with money right now as they try to ramp up the Model 3. So I think, you know, at different points in Tesla's life, I think they might have picked a higher number perhaps, but you know, it's clear that they want to start a presence in China.
Yeah. Can you guys hear me all right now?
Yeah, you're back in action.
All right. Yeah, that's pretty much it for Tesla's effort in China. We really expect something to come out very soon. And staying on the Chinese EV market, Geely, the owner of Volvo, originally a Swedish auto manufacturer, now pretty much a Chinese auto manufacturer since they are moving a lot of the production capacity in China. There's some controversy right now in the country because, again, coming back to Chinese protectionist law, there's a weird thing that's going on about the batteries that are used in the EVs in China. So China, since 2016, they implemented a new rule that forces automakers to use Chinese batteries inside Chinese vehicles. And it's quite a wide-reaching rule that it's up to the... You cannot even use a foreign chemistry, basically, in the battery. It has to be a Chinese chemistry, too, because the workaround that basically Geely found is that they are making their own batteries in China, but it's the batteries are basically cloned of LG Chem batteries. They're using the same chemistry, and LG even helped them set up the production lines. So it's not like they are a copycat type of thing that they, without LG's as approval, LG is actually a part of a what is basically a joint venture with Geely. And to me, it sounds like perfectly normal. I think that it's pretty much how China has been operating for a while now. But other foreign automakers are claiming that they cannot do the same deal as Geely is doing because Geely is like highly connected within the government in China. Which is giving an unfair advantage to, consequently, Volvo, which is making now its EV in China, with what is considered to be more high-end lithium-ion batteries made by LG. So other automaker has to use like BYD as LiFePO battery and with phosphate, and same thing with KLLT, which is now the biggest battery manufacturer in China. They're not considered to be on par with LG Chem, Samsung SDI, Panasonic, and all those manufacturers. So the biggest concern right now is, what does it mean for like Tesla and Panasonic, and are they going to set up their own gigafactory there? Because our understanding is that they would aim to produce the same batteries that they're producing now at Gigafactory 1 in Nevada, which is chemistry co-developed between Panasonic, which is a Japanese company, and Tesla, which is a US-based company. And they would make that in China, which is pretty much the same thing that Volvo is doing right now. So I'm really a little bit confused by this. But again, Geely is claiming that anybody else can do it too. It's not the loophole that they're exploiting or anything. It's just common sense, basically. So,
yeah, but, China's got a lot of rules, and it's weird because not only do the rules not always make sense, you know, clearly it's a very protectionist kind of situation. But
very
what's kind of weird is that, and you know, tell me if I'm aligning myself with Trump here and turn it off. But it feels like they don't get penalized at all for being protectionist. Like, you know, there's no YouTube in China. There's Youku, and there's no Facebook, and there's, you know,
well, they won, basically. That's like another thing. Like they already won. They have too much control, too much impact. Like we cannot live without Chinese product at this point. Like,
right. So that's it. Like, you know, but it's just weird to me that, like, we're not talking about, hey, like, why don't you just, you know, be fair on the world market? Like, why can't China just play on a fair playing field? And just weird to me that that's just not part of the
well, the they discussion. Did the first step. Like, it's the first step in the right direction right now, what they're doing with EVs, at least. It looks like they recognize the fact that it's such an important part of it would have such an important impact to accelerate the transition to electric transport that they're willing to, for a rare occasion, to forego their protectionist laws in order to accelerate that by letting foreign companies be more involved. So it's a step in the right direction. It shows that they're not completely crazy about protectionists, and they are crazier about accelerating the adoption of EVs, which is a good sign. But yeah, it's still far from a free trade market at this point. I mean, from a free market.
Yeah, I mean, the flip side is that the government has now decided that they want to increase the amount of EVs, and clearly, you know, with the pollution in Shanghai and or sorry, in Beijing. Like, it's no mystery why, but like when the government wants to do something, they just do it. And
oh yeah, dude, they're good for that. Yeah, that's for right. sure.
So our
they have the more aggressive ZEV mandate than anywhere in the world.
And the scale way beyond anywhere in the world.
Exactly. So if you have the most aggressive one and you're already the biggest market, then you have automatically the biggest impact. So that's going to be huge. And then especially next year, that's the ZEV mandate start at 10%. Of course, it's still a credit-based system, so it's not actually going to be 10% of the cars, but
could start getting there.
Yeah, it's better than nothing. Now we can talk about boring stuff. Just talking about protection obsolescence.
That joke's never going to get old.
Yeah, it's pretty boring already. But we're talking, of course, about Elon Musk's boring company. A few things that came out this week. Did I skip what? I didn't put the main article that I wanted to talk about, which because the first thing that came up this week that was very interesting was, and I didn't put in an article here.
You're talking about the LA Metro one?
Come in?
The LA Metro conversation?
Yeah, but before that, there was, it's in the article, Lincoln's article, that Elon announced that he wanted to combine SpaceX's effort to use the BFR rocket for a Earth-based transportation system with the Boeing company's Hyperloop system to create a way to get... I'm going to go back a little bit here because if you're not aware, SpaceX has the BFR program, which is the big rocket that they want to use for colonizing Mars. So it's a much bigger rocket program that they have now. And they can put over 100 people per launch. So there's the rocket and there's the spacecraft. And it's the reusable one. So you can also land back on Earth to get another boost and boosting the refueling spacecraft, link up to the spacecraft, passenger spacecraft, and send that to Mars. So the same, they want to use the same system for a Earth-based transportation system that goes through orbit, which would basically allow you to launch from anywhere in the world to the other side of the globe in half an hour or something like that. For example, they gave Los Angeles to Shanghai in 28 minutes, 36 minutes, something like that. And all they do it is that like most of the launch is most of the time is actually launching into space. Then once they are in orbit, they can obtain a speed of 27,000 kilometers an hour and then flip the rocket, start boost the rocket again as they come back into the atmosphere and then land the rocket with land the spacecraft actually. And put a new booster and go back on and so on. The biggest the most time consuming thing if you do that is actually going to that spaceport because no, you cannot put that spaceport in downtown Los Angeles or something like that. So, especially not if you're landing there again. You have to put that probably at sea or in the desert or something like that. So to get there, that's another half an hour, something that you're adding to the trip. So Elon tweeted this week that he wanted to combine the Boeing company's Hyperloop with that. So you'd have an Hyperloop going to that spaceport, which is outside of the city in the isolated zone. And then you launch in the air. So technically, you could get from an Hyperloop station downtown to the spaceport in less than 10 minutes. And then half an hour, you're on the other side of the – you take the rocket and you're on the other side of the world. So, of course, that's a very valuable service, completely possible based on SpaceX current technology. They just need the BFR program, which is underway right now. And so that was a brilliant idea, I think, because everything, it's not, there's a few engineering challenges, of course, but I think they have all the technology ready for that. It's not, SpaceX already proved that they can land rockets, and Hyperloop is far from impossible too, though there's not a full-scale one really ready at this point, but they're working on that too independently of that specific project. So I think combining the two is a brilliant idea, and we thought they were going to talk about that because right after Elon Musk announced that, he announced that they were going doing a town hall meeting to talk about the Los Angeles, the Boring Company's Los Angeles project. So we made the link between that and the project in Los Angeles, maybe a new space sports in Los Angeles to do that. Because that Earth-based BFR thing apparently is, it's a done deal. They were really doing that. It's part of how SpaceX planned to finance the colonization of Mars. Gwyneth Shotwell, the CEO and president of SpaceX, did a presentation at a TED Talk earlier this month, and she reiterated SpaceX's commitment to that project. So it really looks like it's going to happen. And then on the other side, the Boring Company's Hyperloop looks like it's going to happen too. So combining the two really makes sense. But what I ended up talking about in the Boring Company tunnel, they actually didn't talk about that at all. So I thought that was weird. But he did reveal a few interesting new details about the Boring Company, the Los Angeles project. It was a long talk. I know that Seth actually found it to be boring.
It was very boring.
Like, yeah, literally boring. But yeah, it was like an hour and 20 minutes. If you want to watch it all, like, I mean, if you're really interested in it, I still recommend it. But if you want to check out...
I'm waiting for the supercut. Yeah. Also, was it not kind of weird, like the... So it was at a synagogue in Los Angeles, in the on the Topanga Valley or something. And I feel like the video was at a frame rate that you use for like home recordings or something. It felt very weird, the whole thing.
Well, I didn't see that, but
it was,
but, yeah, but the synagogue, I think it was because they were involved in the in like traffic activism, like trying to do a like a grassroots movement to solve traffic problems in LA, because they themselves suffer from it, and the thing was late because Elon Musk was stuck in traffic too. So that's
perfect.
That's very, very fitting. But yeah, if you look at the electric article, we sort of took out the new tidbits and information from it. Most of it we already knew about if you've been following the Boring Company's plan for the network of tunnels in Los Angeles. But it did make a few updates, like he made it more clear the difference between the current mass transit system, like subways. So I think a lot of people don't see the difference between the Boring Company's loop, because there's a hyperloop and there's a loop, and a subway, like a general metro. The biggest difference is going to be the number of stations. So instead of having a few large stations like a subway, you're going to have tons of much smaller stations that are not much bigger than a regular parking spot. So you can have more in them, and each station create smaller bottlenecks. It's not going to create more traffic, because only like 16 person can get on one of the pods at a time. And what it's going to end up to is going to be more personalized. So you're going to be able to get closer to the location you want to get to, because you're going to be able to find a pod that is going like really blocks away from where you want to head up. So the way he framed it is that it's a personalized mass transit system. I mean, I'm not sure how much I agree with that. Like, how personalized can it be? But the best analogy, I think, was with the highway. He's saying that it's closer to an underground highway that is using autonomous electric vehicles than a subway system. So you're going to have like lanes of tunnels side by side, and also levels of tunnels. So you have more tunnels on top of each other. That makes sense, because you're going 3D instead of 2Ds like a road. And of course, a metro is a subway is also, it's 3D, but just one level. So there, that's another difference. What else did he say? He said you brought up a price, $1 a fare.
Yeah, I don't know if that's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, that seems excessive. I mean, let's go with $2, I think.
Right.
Let's start with $2 or something like that. Because he made the comparison with the bus, like he wanted it to be cheaper than a bus. I mean, you could be cheaper than a bus if it's autonomous, but I mean, I feel like it's going to be too cheap for that. You I'm no economist or anything, but I feel like that's not going to work. But it does make sense if you can really reduce the cost of tunneling, which is all that project relies on. It relies on decreasing the cost of actually digging those tunnels. And he did talk a lot more about how they plan on achieving that. So he already talked about reducing the diameter of the tunnel. So that by how they achieve that is, of course, by having the vehicle inside the tunnel going on a rail instead of having a lane. So you can have a much smaller diameter and have the vehicle on that rail. But other things that he talked about too was maybe the most interesting one was how they're going to get rid of the dirt. So they already announced that they were going to make bricks out of the dirt that they coming out of the tunnel. But he elaborated on the bricks because apparently it can go up to 15% of the cost of a tunnel is just figuring out how to get rid of the dirt. So if you make a product out of the dirt, then people are taking them off your hands for you by actually buying them for extremely cheap cost.
Yeah, bricks initially might be cool, but like I don't know if that's going to work out long term. Like once you have your boring brick and you know you build your boring brick fort in your front yard, I don't know if you're really going to want to take too many off their hands. Also, it's dirt, so it's heavy. You can't really ship it like far for cheap. So
yeah, I think the price of it will just cover the shipping cost. Basically, and they're gonna give it for free the bricks or something like right. that. Like, they just want to cover the shipping out of those things. So if you can actually find a use for the bricks, that might make sense. So you talked about affordable housing. So I'm not sure really how much you can use that. I mean, I think if you want to do something with it, just partner up with Trump and his wall. Mm-hmm. make the wall with that, and Trump's going to be so happy with it. And really, no one care much about the wall. Well, there's the conversationalist, like the one who converse the environment, because putting a wall is a big issue at that level. So I don't know about that at this point. But I mean, I'm sure just he was talking about what the structures, like making like a pyramids, a replica of the pyramids, but lifestyles, maybe not lifestyles, but still like pretty big.
They could make a land bridge to Catalina Island. That would be a nice touch for LA.
Yeah, I'm not sure you want to make that in dirt. No. But you know how Elon works for the marketing, like how he sold, how many flamethrowers, not flamethrowers that he sold. If they really do a kit like that to replicate famous landmarks, they're going to sell a bunch of them, I'm sure, easily. So, though I'm just not sure like how many of those like you need to sell to have a big impact on that. Like, for example, right now what they're trying to get approval of is a 2-mile tunnel in West Los Angeles. How many pyramids is that?
Yeah, so you do 14, you know, like pi r squared, so 14, so it's 7 squared times pi times 2 miles. And my prediction is maybe like a half mile of that gets made into souvenirs, and the rest is mm-hmm. dumped in a desert in east of LA.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I'm not like familiar enough with construction process to very know what you can do with those bricks. Like, if you can actually make like useful structure with them, like actual buildings, then yeah, it makes a lot of sense. But like we don't see that many buildings these days just made with like those large cinder blocks like bricks. But he says that they are actually stronger than cinder blocks. So I don't know.
We'll see.
Like, I'm really not expert on that. He actually talked about also how they're going to increase the actual speed of boring, like the boring machine. And he talked about the three different boring machines that they're working on. They have the original one that they bought, like a year ago. They have the new one that now the new one is the first one, the Godot, they only use to learn from the boring machine because they admittedly knew nothing about tunneling. And I think actually that's their biggest advantage here. Like, they knew nothing about tunneling. They just took a bunch of SpaceX engineers that knew nothing about that. They're just good. They work well with Elon Musk's first principle approach to engineering, just going back to the basics of physics and see how can you innovate by just having the limitation of physics, and that's it. So by doing that, they're not encumbered by any preconceived idea that boring, not the joke is making it difficult to actually talk about it, but the actual digging machine, whatever. So people that work in that, like for years and years and years, you start to think that all the limitations are not challenges, they're just limitations. You cannot overcome them. But yeah, so now put a bunch of rocket engineers on that, and you can. I'm sure it makes a few of the improvement I'm talking about, like the maybe not 10 times speed improvement, but a 3 times speed improvement would make sense. So yeah, the few things that they are doing right now is finally making it all electric with batteries instead of a power line. So they don't want to have to use power line to. So if your tunnel is a few miles long, you have to roll out tons of power line in it, which is expensive. So instead, they're going to use batteries, Tesla batteries, on the actual boring machine. So the Tesla batteries is not going to be just for the pods, which are also electric, but the actual boring machine too. And we recently reported on Tesla selling up to $400,000 in batteries and motors to the boring machine, the boring company. So we thought that was mainly going to be for the pod, but it looks like it's actually for the boring machine too.
And so the speed doesn't actually get, like, it's not fast. It's you know, they have that mascot, Gary, the snail. Yeah. And they're right now at 1/15th of Gary's speed, and they're hoping to get to 1/10th.
Yeah.
And maybe one day even faster than Gary.
Yeah. The overall goal is to get faster than Gary. So 0.03 miles per hour. That's when they want to get to. And right now they are less than a 10th of that, 100 of that, and they want to get to a 10th with the new machine. And with so the what we're saying, that the new machine that they got is a machine that is a regular boring machine, but they are implementing now what they learned from the original one, Godot. So they are making a hybrid of an original standard boring machine and what will eventually be a fully boring company developed boring machine. So that one is going to be the one that features the bigger, the more significant upgrade in terms of powers and speed. But again, like Seth said, the speed is not, it's not going to be like something that's going to blow you away. I'm actually supposed to dig with the machine in a few months, so I'm going to check it out. Sure it's going to be fun. But yeah, what else? So basically, what you come out of the meeting feeling like is that they're trying to get feedback from the community and trying to reassure the community that there's not going to be they're trying to be invisible basically during the whole process. They reiterated, like, I know a lot of people are concerned about earthquakes. Always people,
right? That was a big thing.
Yeah, but apparently, and we checked that with a few experts, and it's really not an issue with the earthquakes. It's really just a surface phenomena that. Inside a tunnel, you're actually safer during a hard crack than on a surface. So they're trying to really push that because it's a concern for a lot of people. And of course, they're concerned for just people living on the surface. Like if you have property there, they think if you dig under them, that's going to be an issue. And they're trying to really reinforce the idea that it's not going to be. So we'll see, because of course, it comes back to the exemption with CECA that they're seeking, and that they're trying to downplay the importance of that, or at least for the proof concept and all the... they stated that they're going to do a full environmental study with CECA to get approval for the full tunnel network, but they are getting an exemption for the proof of concepts in West Los Angeles, because they want to start digging on that like as soon as possible. And the CECA study would take like a year or two. That slows down the process a lot. But that's it for the boring company. Before we go, I just want to mention real quick a fun study that came out of London last week, this week, that was commissioned by the London EV company, which is the guys that are doing the new electric black cabs in London. They commissioned a study from an acoustic expert from the University of York, And it's a fun one. They look at the brain monitoring activities of cab drivers when they're driving the black electric cab and the black diesel cab. And they found out that the same drivers, when they drive the electric one, they are less stressed, more calm, more focused when driving the electric version than the diesel one. And I thought that was really fascinating because I experienced that when I drive electric. I feel a lot more calm in an electric car than a gas-powered one, especially once you've been driving electric for a while and you go back to gas-powered car.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you're harnessing explosions like 6 feet away from you. So, like, there is some, like, justification for the stress there. But, you know, it's nice because it's, like, yet another reason why electric seems to be a better choice than internal combustion.
Yeah. And of course, the study was mostly focused on the actual acoustic and the sound. So if you're more, you're not overloaded with sound, you're less stressed, you reduce the stress. But I mean, yeah, I completely agree with that. Like, even just like I hear the bus here going on my street and I hear the brakes. And automatically my body tense when I hear a brake of a bus or something like that. Like, well, I hear, well, you still use brakes in an electric vehicle, but of course a lot less with the regen. Just another little nugget of information about EVs being better that, of course, we already knew about. But we have actual data now to prove it, which I think is fun. Go check it out on Electrek. We did a few a nice summary of it. Well, that's pretty much it for this week's episode, guys. Thanks a lot for listening and watching on YouTube. Big thanks to our Patreon supporters, making a big difference by contributing to our Patreon page at patreon.com/Electrek. We're going to be back next week with a ton of new stuff. We're going to work on a few interesting things this week. So keep an eye out on Electrek for a few cool reports to come out. And probably, hopefully, we're going to have the information about the performance version of the Model 3 and the all-wheel drive version. And maybe I'm even going to get to place my order finally after 2 years. That's going to be fun.
It's going to be exciting.
Yeah. See you next week, guys.